Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Lee Cantor here with Katie Galley, another episode of High Velocity Radio. And Katie, it's going to be a fun one, huh?
Yeah, it definitely is. We have someone in here from the event that you guys were at yesterday.
That's right. Yesterday, Stone and I had a unique opportunity to do the first live radio broadcast that is non-sports at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in the FinTech South 2018 event. It was an amazing event. Atlanta, as people may or may not know, 70% of all financial transactions happen through the city of Atlanta and one of the many firms that serve it. And we had a lot of heavy hitters there, including the CEO of the company that we're going to be talking with right now. Welcome, Steve Karp with Fat Merchant. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
So we had your CEO on yesterday for a short interview about Fat Merchant, but now we got you here just coincidentally, I guess.
This was booked
a long time ago. To tell us a little more in depth about what Fat Merchant is up to. So can you tell us a little bit about Fat Merchant? What are you guys doing for folks?
Sure, happy to. So we focus on providing payment processing software for small businesses. Right.
So for the payment processing, now there's a lot of payment processing companies out there, but you guys do things a little differently, don't you?
True. We've been around about 4 years, so we haven't been around as long as many of the people that actually are within about a mile of this. Where we sit right now is the hub of payment processing in the world, not only the United States. And long story short, like a lot of companies that get started to disrupt the industry, they recognize what the big incumbents are doing and not maybe doing very well, and come in with what they think are the better answers to the pain points that your average small business owner has, which pain points haven't changed. Nobody's really done a great job at solving all of them.
Well, I'll tell you my experience with payment processing. I used to own a fitness center many years ago, and we had a credit card machine that you swiped and all that. The thing that I hated the most, and you tell me if this is a unique story. So you start, and the person comes in, and they're very persuasive salespeople. They do a great job selling. Then you have it, and you're like, wow, this is great. And then the bill is X. And then all of a sudden, and then 3 months, 6 months, the bill is X plus. And then there's a little bit of creep and there's X plus plus.
And before you know it, it's five and times
then,
X.
And then they're like, and then you're like, you know what? There's better machines. They're like, well, you lease that, own that. All of a sudden you're paying here and there. There's fees coming out of every which way.
I think that's a pretty common, fair experience. You know, the old lawyer's joke. How can you tell when a lawyer is lying? Their lips are moving. Many would say that the credit card processing industry started down a similar path. And so your personal experience as a small business owner is not different than lots of other owners who, over the years, the industry evolved into one where it was served by a handful of large companies known for fairly aggressive sales tactics, fairly mediocre technology, fairly poor customer service, and intentionally complex pricing.
Right.
So you buy something, you think you're buying at X, you wake up 2 years later and it's become 3X and you don't really know how it happened. Nobody really explained it. And so those points of transparency, technology, a better sales model are all the pain points that Fat Merchant set about to solve 4 years ago.
So now how does Fat Merchant solve this?
Right. So from a pricing perspective, we explicitly don't do the things that many of our competitors do. So we don't require you to sign a contract. We don't ever reprice your business. So when you sign up for X, it stays X. Any fees that are going to ever come along your way are included transparently in the disclosures up front. So price transparency is one of those, you know, it's not rocket science. It doesn't take a genius to figure out that maybe what small business owners want is a little bit of honesty and transparency.
Right.
But the businesses of many of our competitors have been built, and frankly, their growth and revenue has been fueled by the type of pricing activities you talked about. So it's one thing to say we're going to stop doing it. It's another thing to stop doing it if you've built your growth on that. So we never, you know, and I came from one of the large players. So I understood why they did it. I understood how they did it. And it's not all egregious, but a lot of it is. And so, you know, we'd say, look, we're not going to play those games. We're going to tell you exactly what it's going to cost. We're going to tell you exactly what's going to happen, when it's going to happen. And you can leave any time with no penalty. So in essence, we view ourselves as having to win a customer's business every month.
Every month.
And win it again and again and again.
Right. And then what you're talking about is kind of a flat fee for service.
Correct.
For the most part.
Correct. For the most part, it's, you know, a subscription pricing model. So think of whether it's Netflix or the many, many, many things that show up at my house every month for one of my teenage kids or my wife. But I don't exactly know what's in the box, but I know that I pay $13 a month and every month that box comes. And so subscription pricing is something that we've picked up and transported from retail industry and brought it into payment processing. And we're really the only people that do it.
And then am I getting the same types of services, same level of service that I would if I was paying, you know, this kind of the fee that keeps changing?
Sure. We actually think better service.
Better service.
Better service. So it's all humans. They're all here in America. And so, you know, you don't need to sacrifice service quality when you come to market with a different pricing model.
Now, at the show yesterday, Sanera, I believe, spoke about the kind of pretty rapid growth that it started out when she started as a new concept, and that people at first, it was a trickle, but then it became kind of a waterfall.
Sure.
In terms of growth. Can
exactly.
you talk a little bit about that path?
Sure. Happy to. The company is about 4 years old now. And so it's exactly right. As you said, it started off small. So I'd say the first 18 months, and this was before my time, was that exact.
If you were there, it would have been much faster.
Well,
probably
no,
9 months, 6 months.
That. No, you know, that everything, and I'm a former entrepreneur, so I understand what it's like to start from literally,
it's a mental shift. That's what she was asking the consumer to make a mental shift.
Yeah, people have been trained trained to buy a certain way,
right?
Because you probably had 10 guys a week coming in
right.
the door trying to sell you stuff.
Something, you know, 1.2, 2.1, 1.3.
And so it was all same variations on the same theme,
thing.
Just different numbers.
Right.
Whereas, right, so we had to retrain people to buy the way that we wanted to sell. Now, again, since most small businesses are owned and run by individuals, right? We're not selling to large corporations. We're selling to people that own one store or two stores or three stores.
Right.
You know, they go home every day and they're consumers, right? So they understand I'm going to pay $13 a month for Netflix, for all the Netflix
exactly.
I can watch.
Right.
So,
and if I only watch one thing, that's on me.
Yeah.
You know?
And if I only go to the gym once,
that's
I pay
me.
$40
right.
for that one
right.
trip. If I go 40 times, I pay $1, right?
Right.
So that helped close the gap. But at the end of the day, still, you're right. We had to retrain and reposition ourselves as this is a better way to purchase a really core service for your business, right? Every business needs to accept payments. Not everybody takes credit cards, but
right.
those who do, you got to do it one way or the other. So let's find a better way to do it.
But so then it helps you, I would think, in the profile of your business that you serve, because you know that since we're flat fee for the most part, only certain, they have to be a certain criteria,
correct.
Number of transactions for
correct.
This to make any
right.
sense whatsoever. If
correct.
You're doing three transactions,
it's going to be really expensive.
You're going to be paying
and
a lot.
We really go out of our way to tell people that this is not the most economic choice for your business at the size you're at.
Right.
Go to Square, go to somebody else, come back in 6 months.
Right.
And it becomes a better deal. And so it doesn't serve anybody if we try and, you know, ram our way through, because in a month or two, they're going to say,
this is ridiculous.
I'm paying $30 a transaction.
Right. It's not worth
crazy.
It. So now what is the number of transactions where it starts making sense?
Usually a small business that does $5,000 or $6,000 worth of payment volume a month.
So it's the dollar amount more than the number of transactions?
It's an easier, we tend to couch it in terms of the dollar, because that's just, I think that's more mentally what the average business owner is in tune with, right? They know their revenue is 100,000 or 20, they think of revenue, and they know that cards account for some percentage of those trends of the revenue. And so we tend to think of it that way.
So if it's $5,000 to $10,000 a month, no matter if that's two transactions, that would still make sense.
Sure.
Yeah. So it's the dollar amount.
Sure.
Really.
Generally. Yeah. Right. And so for the average small business, where the average a transaction typically ranges for anywhere from $50 to $150. You're talking about somebody that's doing hundreds of transactions a month.
Right.
On average.
So then if you're in that range, then you should really consider Fat Merit.
Absolutely. Because not only is it going to be really cost effective, but you're not going to have to go to bed every night wondering what's going to happen the next day or the next month when you get your next bill.
Right. And they kind of ding you just a little bit. So it's like noticeable, but not really noticeable. But over time, you're like,
look,
wow.
I get a, I won't mention the name. I get a letter every year from a large cable company in Atlanta that says your bill's gone up 4%. And I don't.
Right.
4%. Okay. 4%. And every once in a while I'll stop and do the math. And then I stop and think of the pain of switching and I just soldier on and it's okay. But it does add up. You're right.
So now for Fat Merchant, is it only, I know you're based here in Atlanta, but the service is anywhere, right?
Correct. We're actually based in Orlando. We're based in Orlando, Florida. Right.
That's where I thought that's where she started. We have offices here.
We have an office here. We have offices in
Orlando. Still.
Orlando is headquarters. We have offices in Atlanta, Dallas, and Chicago. Mm-hmm. We have customers in all 50 states.
Right. So you don't have to be.
There's no.
It all happens online.
The online and over the phone. We another kind of point of departure from how the industry generally works is we don't have salespeople on the street. That's the way the industry sold 10, 15 years ago. And that model is slowly tapering off. It's just not a particularly cost-effective one. It's one that the business owner doesn't like somebody coming in their store in the middle of the business day. Can I talk to the manager? Can I need to, you know, it's not a model that's working much anymore.
So then how do you get the inbound leads now?
So we get all of our leads through two primary means. One is we run a lot of digital marketing campaigns. So if you Google, I'm sure you Google on Fat Merchant to find out about us. We will now hound you everywhere you go.
So you're remarketing.
Facebook, LinkedIn, you know, we run, so we do a lot of digital marketing. And then we have partners. So we have software companies, we have financial institutions, we have trade associations that refer their customers to us.
So what's an example of a trade association?
There's a restaurant association that is nationwide that we're one of their preferred providers for merchant services. So, right, when you're a member of this association, which provides buying power in essence on everything from napkins to point of sale hardware, which we don't do, to the merchant processing, which we do.
And then, so when you're working with an association, you like to come in as the preferred vendor?
Generally. And we'll oftentimes...
So you'll sponsor that association or do something?
We'll in essence, create a customized deal for their end customers. So the only way that end customer can get it is by working through the partner. So it's a win-win for everybody.
And then, some of the niches you serve are restaurants, obviously.
Restaurants are a big part of the business. Just think about if you walk down any street, right? 20% of what you're going to see are restaurants. So it runs the gamut from mom and pop restaurants, bars, dry cleaners, all the way up to, we have an auto dealership chain in Florida that we have our technology in 50 dealerships. So big businesses.
Well, and that's another good reason to be here in Atlanta. There's a lot of franchisors here in Atlanta, so you can get to know them pretty well. So now, what's your role here in Atlanta?
So, I live in Atlanta, so my role was when I joined the company that I'll be in Orlando when I need to be in Orlando. I wear a bunch of different hats, to be honest with you. A company of our size, the leadership team, while we all have business cards that say certain things on the business card, and we have kind of defined areas of responsibility, we tend to wear a lot of different hats. I'm pretty involved in the scaling of our sales force, the building out of our business development channel, right? So how do we go find partners that we can work with? Those sort of activities.
So then how do you attack something like that? Since you're purposely not going to have a lot of boots on the ground in terms of salespeople, and you're using digital as kind of the foundation.
So when it comes to finding partners, that is a little bit more of a high-touch exercise. So we do have a couple of business development executives whose job it is to, in certain target, so we kind of focus where we play. Mm-hmm. We're, you know, a company our size, I think focus is one of our real strengths and the notion of like, we're just going to carpet bomb the world and win deals where you have to be pretty laser focused. So we're focused on certain types of partners. We have individuals that are responsible for winning and mining partnerships in those particular areas.
And then, so your role is not just here in Atlanta then. So
correct.
Your salespeople can be anywhere.
Correct.
You can be anywhere.
I'm in Orlando a lot. I'm at trade shows a lot. Things like what we did yesterday at the Mercedes-Benz Dome. We do events like that all over the country.
So how do you attack a trade show?
Like we did yesterday, we will exhibit. We'll do a whole lot of pre-show demand generation. So when you participate in an event, you usually get a list of attendees as an exhibitor. We'll do a lot of pre-show marketing to try and drive awareness and demand. We generally like to do invitation type events, dinners, happy hours, things like that, just to build a little bit of intimacy. So in a smaller group, you can get 10 or 20 real potential buyers and really have in-depth conversation.
So you're doing those in the, you're exhibiting at like a restaurant
show or a banking trade show or targeted shows. We're not going to go to, you know, there are shows that get or the biggest restaurant show in the U.S., for example, I think it's 40 or 50,000 attendees. That's not the kind of show we're going to go to. We're going to go to one that's going to be smaller, be more focused on our real core market.
And then is medical, are you going after mm-hmm. medical practices yep. as well?
Medical practices, everything from an individual practitioner to a small hospital group, things like that. That you know, those all lump into small business. And not only do they have the nightmare of payments in general, they have the nightmare of healthcare payments, which
they
is...
They have like a privacy issues
they have
as also, well.
They have extra, yeah. So it's kind of the degree of difficulty is a little higher in that world. But we do real well with, just think of your local doctor or dentist practice and you know, the things they need to do to take payments.
So now, as part of what you do as marketing is... kind of help small business in terms of best practices? Mm-hmm. Do you do provide education and things like that?
We do help. There are a lot of things that small businesses do that they don't even probably think they're doing, and understanding how it affects their business. So for example, you know, you go into a business, you're paying for something, you give them the card, you know, before we had the chip readers we have now, and when people just had to swipe the card, and people still have to swipe cards sometimes because their equipment may be old or whatever. If they swipe it a few times and it doesn't read right, they'll just key it in.
Right.
And that adds, you know, pretty significant amount of cost to the merchant to do that. So, you know, things like that are just real basic things like have your clerk try and swipe it a third time. Right. Little things like that. It can save them 50 cents on that transaction.
Right.
So it's not, again, not rocket science, but it's awareness about what drives cost to the merchant.
Now, what about e-commerce? Do you play in that area as well?
We do. So for our small business customers, I don't know the number off the top of my head is at least a quarter of them we know have websites and shopping carts and are selling things online. So e-commerce for a small business is either a reality or an aspiration. And the problem that most small businesses have had over the years is that, you know, people like us tended to focus either just on the physical transactions in your store or just helping people that had websites and not both. So imagine if you own a t-shirt shop and you sell t-shirts on the website.
Right.
You have to marry all that information together so you can manage inventory, so you can get analytics on what's selling, what's not selling. And if you have two separate providers that are running, in essence, running it as two separate stores, you're going to spend, you know, you're going to be up at 2 a.m. with spreadsheets and index cards trying to figure out data from here and the data from here, putting it all together.
So if I'm a merchant with Fat Merchant, then I can just have Fat Merchant do both.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So that can, and that's all part of my flat
fee. Correct. I'm sure you heard yesterday somebody said the word omnichannel somewhere during the day, which is by now.
We were playing omnichannel bingo.
It's a nausea inducing comment or word, but it's some people call it multi-channel. But it's a business who has a store, has a website. Maybe they have guys in the field. Let's say you run a an air conditioning plumbing shop, right? You got 10 guys driving around in trucks. You have somebody on the phone that maybe is taking payments from a customer who's calling the payment in. You need to have all that done by one provider that can marry all the data and information together.
And that's where Fat Merchant can help.
Absolutely.
Now, walk me through kind of the beginning of a relationship, because I would imagine most of your relationships aren't with people who have never done this before. So they're going to be switching from a provider to you.
Correct. For the most part, yes. We do. I mean, we're more than happy to take on somebody that's starting a new business. That's a little bit of a trickier proposition only because we need to be a little bit more careful and we want to help the new business owner be careful in making the right choice because they've not done it before. Also, you know, the ones that have done it before, they've experienced the pain, right? So they get the proposition that we're selling. And so...
But there, you mentioned this earlier, there is a switching pain.
There can be. It depends. So if you're the corner dry cleaner and all you have is a little terminal on the counter that, you know, you can put your card in and swipe, generally we can work with that existing terminal and we just push a few keystrokes out. I'm oversimplifying it. I'm not a tech guy, but we don't need to go visit the terminal. We don't need to do that.
Right.
Or depending if it's an old terminal or what type it is, we may say, look, here's a new terminal and it'll come pre-programmed from our shop, plug it in, good to go. So that's kind of one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum might be, let's say you're a restaurant, a fairly large restaurant. You have a point of sale system behind the bar. You have one at one weight station, another one in the back, another weight station. And so you maybe have $50,000 worth of point of sale equipment. We don't ever go in. We don't need to replace the equipment. That's not the question. But generally that system has been programmed by some third party software reseller or local provider. So we have to work through them just to reprogram it. Again, you don't need to visit it physically, but there's a few more touches on it to get it to be reprogrammed to point, instead of pointing to processor A, it points to Fat Merchant.
So now, but that's something that I, as the merchant, have to kind of coordinate, or is this something tell me the name of your vendor and then we'll call them? And
we do it from there. I mean, there's a long list of potential vendors, but like anything else, there's a 90-10 rule. So there's only a handful. The usual suspects are the usual suspects. Right. And so we know generally what the process
then
is.
Then how long does it take if I transition from one provider to you?
48, 72 hours.
So within just a couple of days, then I'll be able to, and then it's seamless at that point.
Yep. Yep.
And then for you, in terms of growth, where are you target? Is anything here are you doing now that you have a presence here? What are you doing to kind of jump into the ecosystem here in Atlanta?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you had a chance to meet our CEO. She's a really dynamic personality. So I've been around the industry for a while. I've been around the circles in Atlanta for a while. She and our co-founder and other members of the leadership team are up in Atlanta pretty regularly. So, it's kind of going out almost event by event, spreading the gospel. And
so you're getting active in the, like, obviously tag and the chamber and things like that.
Yep.
And then you're serving the technology side as well as these niche markets that are the sweet spot.
Correct. Yep.
And if a company wanted to learn more about what you guys are up to, what's the best way to?
www.fatmerchant.com. It's fat with two T's.
Now, you promised me off air that you tell me the history or how that name came about.
When companies get up and running, there's two ways that companies who are starting up come up with a name. One, they write a check to somebody who's an expert, and they pay $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 to come up with a name that
There's
a lot of intellectual rationale for why it's a great name, and it passes legal and trademark screening. Or you just sit in a room amongst yourselves and figure it out, and then go pay a lawyer to tell you if you can register or not. And we did the latter. Fast, affordable transaction technology is what FAT stands for.
And you were probably able to get that URL pretty easily.
Yes,
with two T's.
I knew we were onto something when 6 months ago, before I joined the company, I told my fairly technically literate 76-year-old mother, I was joining a company called Fat Merchant. She said, "That's a dumb name." I said, "We have nailed it, Ben.
There you go.
We're doing perfect."
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Can you hang out with us? Got one more guest.
Absolutely.
All right. Next up on High Velocity Radio, we got Paul McKenzie with Altus Telecommunications. Welcome.
Hey, how are you doing?
Doing well. So can you tell us a little bit about Altus? How are you serving folks?
Sure. Well, Altus Telecommunications is a telecommunications broker. And it's great because it kind of dovetails in some things that you guys were discussing already, that pain of switching and the person who's starting a business or running a business and trying to understand that he's not getting ripped off by the escalating cost of his communications every month or every year. What we do is we come forward and we will take your IT person or the merchant or the business person themselves and say, look, you're going to get knocked on your door from AT&T, from Comcast, from XO, from the 5,000 telecom companies that are here. And they're all going to tell you something, and they're going to give you a price, and you're going to say, this is better. You're going to try to figure out what they mean, and you're going to make a decision for that. Don't pay us any money. You come to us, we will take your requirements, we will sift through all of that, and we'll give you the top three people that meet your requirements at the best possible price and help walk you through that decision. You pay us nothing, they're paying us to introduce them to you and make this connection for you. And that way, that headache is off your table. What we'll do is generally in telecommunications, you've got your 1, 2, or 3 year contracts. That's just the nature of the beast. Once we've done that, we're going to work with you so that 6 to 7 or 8 months out before the time your contract ends, we'll do that whole review again to make sure that that process doesn't get you. At the end of that 3 year contract is when, as you said, your home cable suddenly bill went up. Yeah, your contract ended. It took away all the promotions that were found for you and they hit you with the real price. Our job is to make sure that you're always perpetually with your business in the best possible promotional pricing, whether that's if you needed a data center to house something, you needed a cloud solution, or if you just needed a plain old telephone system and phone line or fiber connection.
So now, what is the sweet spot for you in terms of business?
Sweet spots will naturally, as we love to say, any business that needs a phone or internet connection is our sweet spot. And I don't know any businesses that don't need that.
Right.
But generally, we like to keep around 20, 25 seats. In the office is a great sweet spot for us. But literally, if you are a small starting out business with 1 or 2 employees and you don't want to feel that pain of, I know I just signed this contract and I know I didn't get the best possible deal because only one person knocked on my door and I had to get my internet and phones turned on by Tuesday.
So a good prospect for you, though, would be somebody who is just moving into a new space?
Yeah, someone moving into a new space is a great prospect for us because they don't have to deal with that pain of switching.
Right.
Now, naturally, we can help ease that pain of switching. We have systems in place that'll help you do that quick port over, help you move your internet suppliers over. But a new, brand new face, a new business opening up is a great sweet spot for us.
Now, how do you go about getting new business right now?
We have do a lot of lead generation techniques through naturally social media. We have our landing pages. If you ever do a Google search again that says I'm looking for any kind of telecommunication system, wow, you're going to start seeing a lot of pop-up ads with Altus in it. And we are putting more and more feet on the street every day. We believe that having a person face-to-face, walking you through at least part of his experience, even though we've all probably ordered these telecom solutions, some of these solutions do get a little bit complex. They're not that easy. And you're going to want to sit down with someone with a great deal of technical skill to walk you through it.
Now, can you share any stories about customers that you work with that you kind of help grow to the next level?
Sure. We have a pretty funny story because it's that typical round and round where you're teaching your customer to buy from you. And they're like, I've got this great flyer. It's a customer up in Massachusetts. I've got this flyer that says this XYZ company is going to deliver a fiber connection to me for $99. They'll give me my phone, everything and internet. It says right that on the flyer. And I'm like, great. That customer is a partner of ours. We'll put them in the solution circle. But what you're actually telling me is that you need to have simultaneously supported over 150 to 300 people at the same time, right? One, that flyer doesn't include any of the equipment, so it's going to be a lot more expensive than $99. And two, you're going to have a max of about 50 users a pop. So I can sign you to that deal, but you've got 300 people coming in here in the next 6 months. I don't want to hear anything else. That's the one I want. I want that flyer.
Right.
So 3 months later, it's like, people are dropping. And I'm like, yeah, we told you, remember? You. Actually, I put that in a little small print in the contract of our additional writer that I can't guarantee you more than 75 people at a time. Best you ever got was 50 to 65. So we got to come back in there, right? I was able to renegotiate. And yeah, it's going to cost them more money, but there's an interruption. But the great thing was is that we got all 300 users supported and we added additional users for them with what the reasonable price was. Their business is growing. And at the end of their contract, they're going to be leveled off on their pricing.
So you can get clients anywhere in the country?
Anywhere in the country, actually anywhere in Europe and Asia as well.
That's who you serve? So yes. How do you kind of serve in person to somebody in Massachusetts? How is that done?
We are hiring more and more people to get people out in Massachusetts. Right now, I flew out to Massachusetts and handled that personally because he was talking 300 seats. So I was like, I'll make a trip for myself.
So you're based here in Atlanta, though?
Yes, we are headquartered here in Atlanta.
But you have clients all over?
We have clients all over the world.
Wow. So how was that when you were growing outside of Atlanta? How did those first sales occur?
Well, primarily there were people coming inbound to us, and we were lucky enough that most of those folks were technically astute to have a list of specifications that we could meet and do things virtually, conference calls or by Skype or video conference. Those were very easy to do. And as people started to growing, we're putting myself and some other folks on planes to make things happen. But we want to organically start putting actual people in some of these cities.
So then they are kind of your sales and support people in different markets to help grow those particular markets?
Right. We like to try to marry in every market. That's why it's going so slowly for us, truth be told, is we want to marry a salesperson and a tech person in each location.
And those are two people. You can't find that in one person usually.
It's rare to find that in one person, the one person that has that great skill with people.
Right.
And also is fantastic with bits and bytes.
Right.
That's a rare find. If I can find one, I'd go for it. But also it's better that way because sometimes they can diverge. Somebody's on a sales call and someone's on a tech
fixing
call.
Fixing things, right. So now for you in your career, you've worn many hats through your career. Now you're the CEO here, right?
Right.
And so what's been the most rewarding part in your career of now having your own business?
Well, you want to say time, but you don't have any. So, but there is the really nice thing is that you can sometimes have a better control of when you're chalking out time for your family. Mm-hmm. That is nice. It's nice to say, you know what? My natural inclination is to do all that stuff myself, but I want to take a weekend. You do that. That's the nicest thing. And also, I love solving problems. It gives me more opportunities to solve business problems rather than fill out HR forms.
Right. Less admin in some ways. So now for you, you've had the opportunity to also be a judge at a DECA competition. Well, that's, we've had some DECA folks in here.
Yeah, actually, no. And it's, I was going to attend the DECA and right. my personal story, my best friend since childhood passed away.
Wow. I'm
so sorry. I had to get up to, we're originally from Baltimore, to get up to Baltimore for his funeral. So I missed that. I want to do it next year. I'm really apologetic.
You're active in that organization?
Yes, we want to. That's going to be my first foray into it. I want to get super active in it because I was very impressed from what I saw. When I just kind of visited the and got an understanding of where these folks are, I want to get very involved in it.
Right. And that's helping, I think it's high school age kids kind of get some business experience.
Absolutely. And we're very personally committed to that. I'm very personally committed to the younger folks are and the deeper they get into business at an earlier age and better understand how this functions, the better off their lives will be. I would much prefer an entire generation of entrepreneurs and mini entrepreneurs and semi entrepreneurs than a generation of folks who are not or just don't understand the free enterprise right. system. They'll, you know, they'll go off to whatever philosophy after that.
Right. I think I agree with you 100%. I think they have the best chance for success, at least even if they get a job and work for other people, at least if they can have that entrepreneur mindset, I think they'll be better served.
Right. At least an understanding of what their boss is going through, that makes them right. a better employee.
Well, I wish everybody in government had made a payroll. I think they would behave differently. If they were responsible for hiring and firing one person, they would look at what they do differently.
Absolutely.
So now, what are you most looking forward to? What do you got plans for coming up?
What I'm most looking forward to is having a fully staffed team across the country, at least, and then starting to put more and more hard staff people into Europe and Asia. That's what I'm most looking forward to. And after that, I'm most looking forward to my daughter's graduation from middle school and starting off in high school, getting her closer to college.
Oh, well, I don't know. High school, that has its own challenges there. I don't know.
I just survived my first year of the transition from middle schooler to a high school. It'll be okay. You'll be okay.
You need a support group, probably. So now, if somebody wanted to learn more about Altus, what's the pain that your customer's having right now where Altus is the solution?
The biggest pain that I'm hearing coming in is understanding how to implement the cloud in their business where it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So they're contemplating going to the cloud and they may not be ready yet or haven't pulled the trigger?
Right. It falls into two categories. I completely don't understand it, but I heard a million advertisements for it, so I need to have it for my business. Or where do I draw that line where I want to have stuff on-premise under complete control? And what do I want to just render over to the cloud and be managed in that fashion?
Right. We had, yesterday it was interesting. We had somebody, I think it was a software company that said that still most companies use have mainframes.
Oh, absolutely.
They're not on the cloud.
Yeah.
And that was pretty surprised, but they do software just for those folks. So once again, website for Altus?
Altus, Altus, telecommunications.com.
AltusTelecommunications.com. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you.
Pleasure meeting you and a pleasure meeting you, Steve. Thank you both for participating. Thank you, Katie, for pushing all the right buttons. Great job.
Thank you so much.
This is Lee Cantor for Katie Galley. We will see you all next time on High Velocity Radio.